The History of Personal Computing. History of Personal Computing.
Hello, everyone. This is show 44 for Friday, August 19th, and welcome back to the History of Personal Computing eBay Edition podcast. On today's show, we're completing our look at the second tier of personal computing, portables. We'll be covering the Asus EEEPC, netbooks, and any other interesting laptop mutations that we might come across. So with that, welcome to the show, and I'm joined here by my regular co-host, Jeff.
Yeah, the one who apparently slept through about 26 episodes because...
Oh, wow, we jumped
explain
up.
Explain the 44.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So Jeff and I were talking, and we did like a certain number of episodes, and we kind of revamped the show into the eBay edition, then we started with one again. So I think this would have been eBay edition 18. But... So I looked, and I thought that we should sort of streamline the number, and then we can kind of better keep track how many episodes in total we've done. So it turns out we've done 43 shows, unique different episodes, so we're going to just start numbering them. So this is now show 44, so for now on, that's how we're going to do that.
Yeah,
oh, plus just a show note, too, is I'm out in my garage, and so if things sound a little bit odd or some weird noises here and there or whatever, I've just been working out here, and it rained some, and it's just kind of nice. So I thought I'd do the podcast from out here. So what's new with you?
I'm still in my damp basement. Hey, do you know who... Are you familiar with a bunch of the old arena bands from the late 70s, early 80s?
Some, like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went to see Boston last Saturday in Atlantic City. And they're still going strong. Only one original member, but boy, that brings back memories of sitting in front of the 8-bit computers listening to their new songs.
I've heard the term arena band, but what does that mean exactly?
Well, it's the sound. Boston, Foreigner, Journey would be an arena band. Who else would be?
Kansas?
Kansas could. They're a little on the progressive edge.
What other bands named after cities?
Yeah.
Or states, rather. I'm sorry. States and cities.
That's right.
How about Rush?
Rush could be an arena band, but they have kind of their own sound. They would just have that like full guitar sound, full vocal sound.
Okay. REO Speedwagon?
Yeah, they would be an arena band. Who sang that song, Sister Christian? Night Ranger would be an arena band.
Oh.
So they just I'd say 8 to 10 years that pivoted around 1980 would be arena band.
Hmm.
So they have a distinctive sound, you know, top 40 rock pop.
Yep.
Sound.
Pop rock, and definitely. That's what it was, right?
Yes. So that would be an arena band. There might be a better definition somewhere. I think there's this thing called the internet that, you know, we could find that answer in. But
that
anyway.
Was definitely like a top 40 style because
yes.
In the early 80s, you also had the new wave movement coming into play. You had punk
and
music.
And disco was dying.
Rock. Yeah, disco was still around, but dying. And then you had, I don't think, would you call it heavy metal? I guess you would in some situations.
Yeah, you get heavy metal starting definitely. To come in to its own. People just wanted to, you know, basically bang their head.
And then glam rock, that hadn't happened yet. That's what arena bands turned into, I guess.
Well, didn't glam rock start a long time ago, but kind of like Bowie was the only one really doing it?
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
And then Hall & Oates did a little bit of that. They had that glam look in their early days before they just kind of normalized and, you know, put on 80s
hair. But I think
and,
what most people think of glam rock or whatever is like they're more leaning towards sort of the long hair top, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pop heavy metal type of band or whatever. Right?
Oh, I see what
I'm
you
no
mean.
Music right? expert.
Glam. Okay. Yeah.
What's a good example of a glam band?
Glam rock? Glam band. Stripe? Duran Duran? No, Stripe. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they may have decorated their costumes.
Oh, we could be confusing two different sort of styles. You're right, because Duran Duran was sort of... So I think there's two different genres there. And I'm thinking of more of the later 80s, and you're probably still thinking...
Well, glam, I guess, also included makeup. But now, that wouldn't be Kiss, though. They just really loaded on the makeup. They were more like costumes. But
The glam guys, they like almost look like women, and so, like
Twisted Sister in there, and Dee Snider, if that was considered glam, because
kind of a hybrid, Kiss and anyway, we're off the track.
Anyway, this is History of Personal Computing Music Edition, show number one,
featuring glam bands.
That's right. Hey, you know. People can listen to music and they're thrown into time instantly, remembering what they were doing at the time. And I like to think I listen to music and I remember which computer I was sitting in front of or which video game system I was sitting in front of at the time. So, that Boston concert was pretty good. They, even though they have one original member, the original guy who engineers everything and wrote almost all their songs. He's still with the group, and it just sounded great. It was just a nice break from things. It was kind of a last minute purchase, and I didn't get the front row seats like I usually like to buy. But I was way out in nosebleed section K, but it was still good. But anyway, I just kind of relived my past that weekend. It just kind of reminded me that that's what I listened to when I was first getting into the computing stuff. But anyway, that was basically a sidetrack. We have some news, and okay. I guess I'll start with mine.
Go ahead.
About it. This is basically it's called Run Mac OS 7 in your browser. And we know from the Internet Archive and archive.org that they have a lot of browser-based JavaScript emulators, but...
Yeah,
this one was rolled together by somebody who's in Australia. Basically, you can run what seems like a Mac Classic with System 7. Or is it OS 7? It's OS 7.
Yeah, that's what it says. I was going to say, because I was looking at the article, and I was saying, I think it's been around for a little while, but...
Well, the article is 23 days old, so maybe it has been around. Well, I ran it, and it actually looks... pretty good. I'm running it right now. It just puts a picture of a Mac Classic, and it boots up. It loads everything, and then it opens up. Here is here I'm with the Macintosh HD and the KidPix program folder open, ready to run.
And how do you get to the? Oh, okay, I see. So how do you actually get to it?
Well, you put your there should be a link. It says Macintosh Plus Emulator.
Oh, they got Dark Castle.
Do they?
Yeah.
There's so much to Dark Castle. I don't see that on the emulator I'm working with here.
Oh, because once you go into it, I guess it changes some of the side screens. But okay, so I see it.
The trash can's full. What's in there? A folder called F. Probably all the secret files. So whatever image they created for this, it's already got a full trash can.
That's pretty neat.
But HyperCard Player, MacDraw 1.9, MacPaint 2.0. But, yeah, it looks like you're in front of a Mac.
It looks authentic.
Yep. And when you put your pointer right in the screen, it suddenly becomes a Macintosh pointer. And press and hold and see about this Macintosh. Plus.
That's pretty neat.
4 mega memory, system software 7.0.1.
Yeah, and if you notice, if you do the little, you click on the little, Apple logo and you say about this Macintosh, and it brings up the little dialog box about this Macintosh. Do you see, are you doing that?
Yep.
And it gives you the specs and all that, and it says system software 7.0.1, and it's got that little dot. And I'm trying to remember what that means.
Oh.
It was like a little bug fix or something Apple released. And I remember, so this is, it eventually went to 7.1, was sort of a semi-major update, and then 7.5 was a major, Mac OS or system update, it was called. Anyway, I'm trying to remember what that little
source code.
But I remember
the source code here on GitHub. You could probably run this in your own web site web browser. So I guess to some extent it's probably free to use.
But that's pretty neat. And then also just to mention on the side, you can also do Macintosh System 6, and he's also got like Windows 3.1.
Yes,
and some other stuff you can try. You can try out.
But computers are fast enough now, and JavaScript works well enough to emulate a lot of these older systems, and it's great. I can't wait to see a JavaScript Amiga emulator.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a lot of processing because of all the custom chips.
No one's done that yet, huh?
No, I'm sure somebody's trying and probably pulling their hair out doing it. But it's neat. I mean, it's one thing to add to a list if you need to run a quick Macintosh for whatever reason. I don't know if you can install any apps.
So, yeah.
But hey, that's what, you know,
But there's mini VMAC, it's called, if you want to have an emulator on your computer and then actually like use it. You can actually, you know, add stuff, files, disk images and all that.
I guess if you play around with the GitHub source, you can add your own disks or drives.
But you know what's funny? You had mentioned the Amiga. Isn't that funny? If you look at my first news thing, someone sent this to me. It says, get your retro gaming fix, the classic Amiga titles you must play on the Internet Archive.
I got to read these show notes.
Unfortunately, here's the thing is, let me click on it and see if it's the deal, that it's not working though now.
The Amiga library has already been taken down.
Yeah, so if you go to the Internet Archive.
Wow.
So let me go in.
You know what? You know who owns that?
Or who's working on it, Jason
Cloanto.
Scott?
Cloanto owns the rights to the Amiga ROMs, I believe, or owns the license to distribute them.
But so what the article says is, this is from just like 9 days ago on the 10th, what's it say? So get your retro gaming fix, the classic Amiga titles you must play on the Internet Archive. And there's over the Commodore Amiga 80s and 90s gaming platforms, let's see, added over 10,000 Amiga titles to its emulation library.
Yeah, I went to look at it, and there's only two.
Oh, really? I couldn't get it to load up. But apparently, I'm trying to think what is, because I looked at it the other day.
Oh, these are software library, and, okay.
But apparently they're sitting there beta testing it still.
Okay.
So they took it down.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just enough so it can whet people's appetite and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right. There's two things there. Maybe they're... if you click... So there's a collection. There's Amiga Screenshot General Corpus. And there's Amiga Screenshotting Project Collection. So if you go to the About tab, it says, after a beta testing period, the emulated Amiga programs at the archive have been taken down for further development. Thanks to everyone for testing the Amiga and browser emulation package during the beta period. So I guess...
Wait this out.
Be looking... looking for that, and it'll come back up at some point. And Jason Scott is created this as far as putting it on the archive. So I'm sure if you followed him, he'll probably announce it when it comes out. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. He'll keep us all informed.
He's a retro computing celebrity.
Yes, he is.
Look him up if you don't know who he is.
I met him in person.
All right, so moving right along, I wanted to also mention that the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest is going to the website recently. At this moment, 21 days, 15 hours, 57 minutes, and 24, 23, 22 seconds away.
Keep counting.
So it's Saturday and Sunday, September 10th and 11th in Elk Grove Village, Illinois, outside of Chicago at the Holiday Inn. And
I won't be able to make it this year.
I can say that my wife and I have confirmed we're going.
Oh, wonderful.
She's going to drive, or we're going to drive her vehicle. It's bigger than my Beetle. And we're going to go. So we're going to book the rooms tonight, in fact. The room, rather.
Yeah, in the same place where the event is at. That made it so easy last year, because you just go downstairs and
get your... You went there last year.
Yes, I did.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I hardly ever left the hotel. I mean, I went to see the area, tried different places to eat, and also went to visit... Jason runs that. Another Jason runs that.
Yeah, Jason.
I went to his house. You know, he had a little gathering and stuff. That's where I got my K-Pro. It was fun. I like the fact he didn't have to leave the hotel because they got a nice restaurant there anyway.
Just to mention, it's also the VCFMW also includes the Fall Commodore Expo, or the ECCC, which is the, and I don't have it listed here, the Emergency Commodore Something Convention. It's a funny title. So check it out. But you know what I really like? And now their previous, I went to, I think it was either 2011 or 2012. I've been to this one time. And that you also stayed at a hotel, which was right next door to the convention area. So you did have to just walk out the building to the other building. But it was right there. And I really like that. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, this time you'll be in the same building.
And to me, this is the closest thing to sort of the Kansas Fest experience.
It is still in the same hotel as before, right?
Yeah, because it mentions like from last year. But I really wish we would do that here, to tell you the truth. That would be, you know, I like that. That be able to have the actual event right in the same, you know, even though I live here for VCF Southeast, I think it'd be great, you know, because it's great. You can stay there and hang out with everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
but anyway, well, I'm really you just have to find a convention, a motel or hotel with a convention center that has a decent price.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how much it costs. I'll have to talk to them about that and see.
Because Midwest is free attendance, right?
Oh, they are accepting donations, so they're close to their goal. And, you know, any dollar amount could help. So go to the link in the show notes and you can, you know, throw a few bucks their way, especially if you're going like we are. So I actually made a donation earlier. So, all right, well, moving right along.
Every little bit helps.
Jeff and I are trying to keep the show to a certain stopping point, so we're going to keep it moving. Today is one more link in the show notes. This is just a link to my webpage, classiccomputing.com. It's something I've been keeping up for the last couple of years. It's the link of Computer History Nostalgia podcasts. So please take a look. It's a great resource to see what else is out there. But I'm also asking everyone to you know, let me know if I'm missing one. or something's changed.
I was going to call out Carrington Vanston for not updating his 1 megahertz, and I realized my other podcast is on the same list.
I know. I hated to do it.
It's just a reminder.
Well, mine's in there too.
I'm cleaning up my basement. I want to redo a lot of stuff, and as I'm coming across things, I'm finding stuff that I could put a whole Vintage Volts episode together for. And in fact, what I also had done is I'm going through boxes. I actually recorded myself mentioning everything that came out of the box that was, you know, based on vintage electronics. And I recorded, I spent 2 hours basically talking to myself in a microphone.
Put it out.
I have to pare it down a little bit. But yeah, there's some good dialogue.
That's the editing part. That's the part that
talking to myself dialogue.
But basically I have a header current podcast, of course. And then there's no longer updated podcasts if they ended up updating over 60 days. And then there's gaming, and then sometimes related. So there's two in that one. There's You Don't Know Flack and The Retroist. So but anyway, check that out. Let me know if I can add anything or anything needs to be updated or changed. And with that, we're going to move right into our eBay segment. So once again, this podcast is where we take an informal look at personal computing history through the lens of eBay auctions, and it's sort of like the Antiques Roadshow, but all about antique personal computers. And on today's show, we're completing our coverage of the second phase of personal computing, which are the portables and laptops. So in this show, we're covering netbooks, arguably an innovation started by the ASUS EEE EEE PC in 2007. Of course, just to mention, you know, way before 2007, there were some laptops called sub notebooks, and technically, and Jeff, you can maybe throw out a PC example, but the Mac PowerBook, technically, it was kind of a netbook because it was as thin as it could be at the time, didn't have disk drives and certain connections so they could make it as light and thin and least power consumption as possible.
Stuff went through the docking station.
Yeah, right. I know there's at least, I'm sure there's some other PCs sort of that were like that. But the difference with the EEE PC and what happened in 2007, and remember, this is before tablets really became mainstream, for the iPad 2010, is that they introduced really inexpensive, basic little laptops that were cheap, and then you could, you know, and they ran Linux only in the beginning, and then they were really small and thin, and very, you know, the battery lasts a long time and stuff like that.
I forgot to grab mine to have it in front of me here.
Oh, which one? Do you have one?
I have one of the originals.
I know you mentioned it before.
The 900A.
Cool. Well, I have an Acer, and it's a little bit, it's a 9-inch one. It's like from 2009. So, you know, fairly early on, but, and I've updated it and used it as like my little terminal for some of my older computers.
I can almost grab it real quick. I just have to get out of the seat to do it.
So, reading from Wikipedia, so Jeff, you go ahead and take that first part.
Okay, and I'm going to pronounce it just E. It seems, that's what I've been calling it the whole time. Yeah, EEPC. The Asus EEPC, because it's spelled with three E's, four H's, and a silent Q. The Asus EEPC is a netbook computer line from the Asus Tech Computer Incorporated and part of the Asus E product family. At the time of its introduction in late 2007, which is about the time I got mine, it was noted for its combination of lightweight Linux-based operating system, solid-state drives, and relatively low cost, although I put mine on a Target charge card. Newer models added the options of Microsoft Windows operating system, rotating media hard disk drives, and initially retailed for up to 500 euros, which I forget what that converts to. About $700.
Yeah, a lot more in 2007.
Well, I had one of the, I think it was one of the earlier ones, the 900A series, which had the customized Linux.
Okay, I was going to ask you that.
And a 4 gig SSD drive.
Yeah.
And it used a PCIe SSD drive. There's two different types of micro SSD drives. And I mean, it was silent. It worked well, had a nice bright screen. The touchpad was very responsive when it didn't give you problems. Sometimes when you took it out of standby mode and you went to use the touchpad, it wouldn't work for up to like 10 or 15 seconds, and then it would just suddenly start working and everything would be fine. But the keyboard, little bit miniaturized from a standard keyboard, but it still had a great feel.
Yeah, and that was one of the complaints of the earliest ones.
Yeah, the battery lasted pretty good. And I would take it to meetings with me at work. Because of its size, I was able to type stuff, and you know, I think the screen was something like 800 by 600 or something like that. It was high, not too high, because some programs, you know, you need to scroll a lot if you know, because they might have expected 1024 or something like that.
Yeah, right.
It worked well, and I still have it to this day.
Do you still have Linux on it?
Well, what I did is I replaced the original 4 gig SSD drive with a 16 gig SSD drive, and I put in Ubuntu Linux and Windows XP as a dual boot system. Yeah, it doesn't leave me much space, but it does have an SD card on the front or the side, and it has, I think, I don't have it in front of me right now, two USB ports, so you can, you know, use that for storage if you wanted to. But I took it to a Kansas Fest with me because it ran my ADT Pro server. It's an on-the-go PC that runs Linux or Windows, depending on how you install things. So it's just ready to go, and as you'll find out later, they can be gotten for really cheap.
Well, mine is from 2009, and it was given to me in like 2012, I think. So the person had already wanted to get rid of it. It wasn't there. You know, wasn't useful for them anymore.
It has
XP on it, and so the first thing I did was add another gig of RAM, so I maximized it to 2 gigs of RAM.
I did that too. The RAM and storage.
And then I don't remember how big it is, but I know I only paid like $79 or something. But I bought a SSD hard drive because mine had a normal hard drive in it. So I put that in it, and first I burned the DVDs so I could restore it, and you know that helped it run a lot better too. So actually, you know, it's an Atom processor. It's not real fast, but those two things, you know, help maximize its performance. So it's pretty cool.
I had mine for a long time, and the battery still holds a charge.
Oh yeah,
probably not as much as it did brand new, but I've had it sitting for months, you know, without being plugged in, and it still can hold a charge.
Mine usually dies out if I don't charge it up for a week, but then it'll charge up and it'll last a while using it. But all right, so. So here's the last part of that Wikipedia article, that we're reading in any case. So So the first EEPC was a milestone in the personal computer business, launching the netbook category of small, low-cost laptops in the West. In Japan, sub-notebooks had long been a staple in computing. According to Asus, oh, here we go, the name E derives from the three E's, an abbreviation, I didn't tell you how to pronounce it, though, of its advertising slogan for the device, easy to learn, easy to work, easy to play, Jeff.
It was. And yeah. Sometimes I'll take mine around if I need to have a quick network, to test something on a network or whatever. I can just plug it right in because it was portable enough. I mean, I can do that with a Surface tablet right now, but
back then,
it's like just I didn't have to drag out a big laptop because it has an Ethernet port and it has wireless.
It very much filled a niche that was missing, or a niche that ultimately the iPad and then Android tablets took over. But having said that,
Raspberry Pi took over.
Well, but also having said that, netbooks still exist. So they have a much smaller little niche in the marketplace. But Windows-based little netbooks, they're out there. And on top of that, I happen to own, because there's some people like myself who, hey, I love an iPad, but I just really like the laptop form factor. And so I actually traded my iPad. I gave it to my wife, and she loves it, for my Chromebook. So a Chromebook's just a modern netbook.
That's right. Modern version, and it runs.
And it does everything I need it to do. So it's, it's limited in some respects, but it does exactly what I need it to do. And it's the nice little laptop form factor, which I really like. So
yeah, this 900A series or 900 series is what Target sold. That's where I first saw it. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had to have it. So I bought one. It came in black and white. I bought the white version because I never had a white PC like that. And it doesn't even yellow. It hasn't changed color on me. It still looks clean. And this version does not have the built-in camera. It's the XP version that has the built-in camera.
Oh, right. That came in
this
later one.
This one has a spot on it where a camera may have been or could have been. But another thing I found shortly after getting it, and I never bought it myself, is that people were inserting touch screen things, right? They've been inserting these sheets, which are basically touch screen adapters. They've been tearing the display apart, inserting the sheet, and then hooking it up inside the device somehow, and then it would give it touchscreen capabilities.
I know another trend that was going on, I think primarily with a Dell netbook that was around in 2010, I want to say. I'm throwing a date out, but I think that sounds about right, was making Hackintoshes. There's a certain Dell, if I'm remembering correctly, that was particularly great for turning into a Hackintosh.
Yeah, my son had an old Dell about that time. We got him for his birthday, but he would have told me that you could do that stuff, because that's the kind of stuff he looks at, seeing what you can do with a piece of hardware. But yeah, I still like this EPC, and for somebody who just needs something that just works, and they can take it with them, and they don't want to spend money for a new netbook or even a tablet PC or something like that. Although you can get tablet PCs for under $100 now.
Oh yeah,
but
you can get modern 11-inch little inexpensive, netbooks with Windows on them and stuff for $140 now.
Well, so I've really seen a Windows. Well, back when Windows 8 was the big thing, at Micro Center, they had a Windows 8. Tablet PC for $79.90.
Really?
Yeah, or $79.99 or whatever. It was close to the holiday season.
I want one of those.
But it's not fast, but it will work for you. It gets stuff done. So, that would be a more modern replacement. But the EPC has a mini laptop form factor. The keys are really easy to work with. The buttons are in a good spot. The Chrome has yet to wear off the buttons for me.
And Asus and Acer are both inexpensive brands, but I think, and it's up to opinion, but in my opinion, they're both decent, cheap brands.
Yeah.
Where you can generally count on their build quality and they're reliable and,
Yeah, like a
they're
Ford
not
Escort.
Crap or anything, so.
Like a Ford Escort.
Yeah, I guess.
Or whatever they sell now. Focus.
Whoops.
It'll get you around. It'll get things done. It's small.
That's a good example, because there's almost no bad cars made anymore. And really, when it comes to
how you treat them,
there's still, I guess, there are bad electronics made, but some of your main brands, it's kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, all right, we'll take it away with your first auction.
Okay. Let's see. Open link. There we
I'm
go.
I'm guessing it's an Asus EPC.
It might be. Now, this one is one of the newer versions compared to, for me, it's all relative from my 900 series. This is the EPC 1001 PXB.
Wow.
So it had Windows XP already on it and a 10.1 inch display. So this was a little bigger than
like the second real generation or whatever.
Yeah. I think mine was like seven or eight inches. It's
the original one was
big,
seven.
Yeah. But it's still a nice size and a nice clean display too. Anyway, this is when they had the, for this, auction, 160 gig hard drive. I mean, you needed that running Windows. I'm surprised I'm running Windows XP in a half partition, 16 gig, SSD card.
Yeah.
Installed RAM 1 gig, max RAM 2 gig, and that's not hard to get. You know, you can get that real cheap and upgrade the RAM to the maximum amount of 2 gig. When this says comes with free mouse and charger, well, I hope it comes with a charger at least. but this kind of looks like the Dell netbook laptop that I told you got my son a few years back.
Yeah,
it has that bigger look to it. Just looks like what netbooks turned into.
Oh, it looks like they restored it. Now that's the only downside is I'd almost rather have my XP than Windows 7 Starter. That was kind of lousy.
But the winning bid on this was $39.
Yeah, yeah, I can't complain.
And $18 shipping, and it runs Windows, and it could probably run Linux on it if you want to. And it just has a small form factor in case you just need to break a computer out for something or use it as an ADT Pro server or, you know, to run, you know, emulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, have a little emulation thing that you can take with you. So that's a pretty decent price. So was it 50, about $60 delivered. And, you know, you still get the box. Oh, yeah, speaking of box, I was cleaning out my attic here and there over the month, and I found the box to my EPC, so I could actually put it all together in original form if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then put it up on eBay for what, $10,000 is how I'm supposed to do it? And yeah. Start high, work my way down.
You got to put triple rare on it.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, Steve Jobs too.
Right. Well, right. So I found an original. My first auction is a Asus EPC 701 white 7-inch netbook. I know, I assume maybe it came in black and white. I know the first one I ever saw was white. I think white was kind of the more common one.
Wait, is mine the 701? You know what? Mine is the 700 series because that was the screen size.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
this
it's got a
does
big
look like mine.
Around it. Really? So
oh,
you have
wait,
a
no.
7-inch?
Oh, no, no, no. I don't have the 7-inch. I do have the 9-inch.
Yeah.
The body is the same size. But the screen, mine doesn't have that big bezel around it. Mine's a full size screen. But yeah, the body's the same.
I remember the first time I saw one of these. I was
that
actually
pearlescent
doing,
white.
You know what? Because I was doing freelance computer consulting, and I went to someone's house to work on their computer, and they also had one of these guys, and I helped them with something on it. I don't remember, but it was
three.
Like it really did seem like a toy, like a
three
little toy
USB
computer.
Ports, two on one side, one on the other, VGA out. SD card on the side. It mm-hmm. It was pretty well loaded with connectivity.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. There was a 701 and a 901, and it was because of the screen size. Yeah, mine's not a 7-inch screen. It is a 9-inch screen, so it was the 900 series. So here, I thought I was just getting old and forgetting this stuff.
But wasn't say okay. So back to this one is an original one. It has the what looks like the original. It didn't say anything about it too much. It's a 900 megahertz. 512 meg of RAM, 4 gig SSD. It's white. It's got it definitely from the picture, it has the original Linux load. They want $69.99 buy it now with $10 shipping from Washington to me. So it's probably from Gig Haba.
Yeah.
And,
no.
So, you know, I don't know. $70 seems a bit much to me, even though it's all original one. So, as a bit of a collectible.
Camera, so
I wouldn't pay $70 for it, but it's...
I wouldn't either.
I think you can watch eBay and probably pick one up cheaper. But it's kind of cool. I mean, it is what it is. It's a classic.
It is.
It changed a generation of computing. No, not really, but anyway. All right, well, that's it on that one.
generation. And you know what? I just picked basically the same thing, but one that sold.
Oh, really?
7-inch screen. It just says Asus Netbook EPC. Still awesome condition.
Trying to get to it. Okay.
But here on this auction, you can see a brighter display, you know, as small as it is, and you can see the dark bezel all around it. But this is the same. Well, you know what? I think the 900 series had a split set of buttons. This one has one big button. I guess you rock one side or the other. Mine is split. Mine actually has two separate buttons.
Oh, and someone got this for $20, so like $38 really total shipped.
Well, they won it for $19.50 and spent maybe $18
awesome
for shipping.
Awesome condition. See, that's cool.
Now, and does this one have the...
I wonder what version of Linux it ran.
Oh, you know what? This one looks like it might have the hard drive in it because the bottom looks a little different.
Huh.
Or you can't expand this for some reason because mine has a trapdoor on the bottom.
You know, this one looks kind of thicker, but who knows? I don't think so. I think they pretty much were all SSD. I remember that was like the big sort of like, wow, you only got 2 gigs, you know, or 4 gigs. It seems so limited.
It's a little sleeve that you can slip it into for carrying.
At the time, but...
It has a different power supply. It doesn't have an inline brick. It has a wall wart.
Huh.
So I wonder if this was like an early design or something.
But I like the little... I like the little Linux on it.
It's not bad. It puts you in, you know, to things that you want to work with right away. But you can still get to a shell.
I gotta get one now. Darn it! I've got one laptop per child. You know, in those original.
Oh yeah, the crank one, the one you crank to power it up.
No. It just I'm trying to think how it came in colors. I mean, the biggest thing you'd recognize when you open up the screen. Like the two corners of the screen fold up into like little antennas. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
This is like the very first one.
Okay.
And it works.
I thought you cranked them for power.
I don't think so. I mean,
they had a version that did that because it was supposed to be available.
Yeah.
In remote locations.
Well, you're right. Maybe it did. I haven't looked at it in a while.
You don't always have power outlets in the desert.
Yeah. Or could that, you know, now I got to look into that. Or someone let us know if you know. All right, moving right along. I chose a weird...
Seen these at Big Lots.
So what happened was, you know, again, we're talking late 2000s. This is pre-iPad. But even in the early iPad era, because iPads, crap, are $500 and more. But you had a netbook filling a little niche and, you know, doing pretty well, $250, $300. So then you had these cheap knockoffs that they sold in, like, Walgreens and other places. And so this one is an early Craig 7-inch wireless netbook, but it has Android. So, you know, which is not really what you call a desktop operating system. So it doesn't, you know what I mean? That's why the first ones ran Linux and then went to Windows. So that's basically what you would see. So this one's $25.17. Buy it now with $2.97 shipping. Isn't that crazy? From Beverly Hills, California.
Yeah.
But there's two available. It says 61 have been sold.
Maybe it fits in a padded envelope.
So these are used and, in the box and everything. So Android 4. Also, Big Lots, I think, sold some of these.
Oh, yeah, they did. That's where I first saw these.
Yeah, and off the top of my head, I think, you know, you could pick these guys up for, like, they'd go on sale, and you can get them for, like, maybe, like right at a $100 price point. Does this sound about right?
Somewhere in there. Yeah, it was, like, they sold them for a steal around Christmas time and stuff. You know, I mean, that'll get them out the door, and people will think they're buying their kids or grandkids a laptop. And that's not the case.
Hey, you can make an offer on this.
Yeah.
So they have a 99.2% positive feedback. Two available, you know what? And to only $2.97 shipping from Beverly Hills. So you can make an offer.
Make it an even $25.
I am so tempted. Should
with
I go
shipping.
For it?
You know, yeah, you should make it 25 minus 297. So make it 2203.
Yep, and then that'd be $25 even?
It should be, if I'm doing my math.
Yep. All right. I'm going to do it.
You're going to buy one? Okay.
Should I offer that much?
Only live, people.
I can always come back. Yeah, remember, I can... Whoops, let's say... So I'm doing it live. Let's make an offer. Let's go 2003, all right? And then I've got $2 I can come up with.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to give the offer to the guy $20. Okay. Okay, he sent my offer.
Oh, so it wasn't automatically accepted.
Right.
Okay.
So they do it automatic. All right, so you take it away with your next one.
All right. My next one is...
Is it an ASUS?
It is. And this is the 900 series.
Okay. Like, so then like they went to 9-inch screen.
Except this is the black one.
Nice.
It was just a choice. Oh, and this has the camera in it. That's because it runs XP.
Yeah.
So this has... And this one was from Allentown. You know, I was just near there today.
And I think what happened by this time, so correct me if I'm wrong, they probably still maybe... Yeah, by this time, they pretty much got rid of the Linux, got rid of the little dinky SSDs, and now they are becoming just low-powered, sort of low-performance desktop replacements.
This one said
15
gig hard drive, so maybe it did still have an SSD drive.
Yeah, that's a weird number. You're right. But it's got XP on it.
Yes. I know. It says... has Windows Vista on it, so they probably reinstalled an operating system on it. This is probably the original Linux style with a new operating system installed. It doesn't look like Vista.
No, that's XP.
Yeah.
The picture, anyway.
Well, okay.
So that's kind of weird. Maybe they just made a mistake.
Well, whatever the case, it has the camera in it, mm-hmm. but it has the bigger screen, so you can see the difference between this and the 700 series. And that keyboard, it is actually a little smaller, maybe percent smaller, but it still fits well. And you can see sort of the double look of the buttons.
What people complained about the original EPCs, the 7-inch ones, is that not just a small screen, but that the keyboard is just almost too small for a lot of people. So once you got into this form factor, this is where they really started selling decently. The 9-inch.
I was happy with mine.
For both the screen size and the keyboard size.
I started just using it on the couch and going Wi-Fi with everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, eventually I got bigger laptops that were technically small laptops by comparison. They'd have more power. I wanted power. I wanted a lot of power. And I ended
up
getting
it from the Atom processor.
That's right. What's this thing show? I'm trying to look at the screen. They have an about screen, but it's blurry. I can't see what it says, and I can't zoom in.
Which they still have a Atom processor, don't they?
Yes, I think there's just a newer version of Atom.
I want to look up what's available in the current realm of netbooks. All right, so...
So, yeah, this is similar to what I have, except mine's that pearlescent white...
Well, and so the next auction. And just to mention too. So I guess we've kind of established this where a lot of times, you're generally sort of picking closed auctions, and I generally go with the current auctions.
Yes.
So this one is current, and so this is an Acer Aspire 1 8.9-inch netbook. So this is actually, I guess, is mine. I think mine might be a 10.1. I kind of think it is, but. For all practical purposes, this is generally like the one I have. So, it says mint next to new condition, hardly used. System restored to factory defaults and original box with all original accessories. Cool. Oh, and then they have the specs from the box here.
In French.
So it's got the Intel Atom N270. So this is like a 2011 off the top of my head. You know, 120 gig hard drive, 1 gig of RAM. Yeah, Windows XP Home.
It was manufactured year 2008.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, so I'm wrong about the date then. But this is $18 shipping from Calgary, Canada. That's why the shipping's a little bit higher. It's got 7 bids at $18.70 with 2 days left. So someone will probably pick this up for like $40, $50 tops.
The A key on the keyboard actually says EH on it.
Does it really?
No. just a Canadian joke.
Yeah, and I remember these colors were the white, black, blue, red, and then pink were kind of the colors.
Yeah, they show pictures of that. They came in different color, and they just put a little dot on which one. This one is just happens to be blue.
And mine is black. Yeah.
So, pink.
All right. What else you got?
I got a random auction. And I picked specifically for the EPC series. This just goes to show, if you do pick up one of these EPCs for yourself, and it has the PCIe SSD card slot.
And so this is like a pull?
This is a 32 gig mini. I mean, they may have used this in many different other devices, but 32 gig, $1,356, $399 shipping. Boy, you know, I could double the storage capacity in mine with this.
Yeah.
But then I'd have to reinstall everything because it's solid state and has this custom connector. But they do make IDE adapters, laptop IDE adapters for these types of cards, but it's an active adapter, I believe. So it's going to cost like $30-$40 for that adapter, but it'll allow you to put these into a system that has the IDE, you know, the laptop's style drives.
Like it says, oh, Samsung. Okay, I was going to say product of Korea on it. Yeah, my netbook is a normal IDE or EIDE, right?
Yes.
So mine doesn't have this.
Now, as long as it's a PCI-E, there's another one. I think it's M something or other. This is a mini PCIe SSD. I think that's the official term for it. They're making these in like 60 gig capacity, 128 gig capacity.
It's getting cheap.
They're still available. But I forget the other. There's two different types of mini SSD cards, and I think they have slightly different edge connectors on them. M-SATA. M-SATA is the other
type.
The M-SATAs won't work, I think. I'm looking at... All I know is
electronics, it gets cheaper.
I think I went, as long as it said PCIe on it, it would work.
Just to mention, so I told you before the show that I have a neighbor I'm helping out just back up her older computer for her. She's getting rid of it. And so she had a hard drive, so I backed her up on that. And then I bought her just an inexpensive flash drive to back up some of her more critical files to have another backup. And it's a cheap flash drive from Fry's. It was the cheapest one I could find, it's a Patriot. It's a brand, which I bought that before. It's not bad. And it was a 64 gig flash drive for $15.
Oh, not bad.
I think that's pretty cheap. So, you know, all this stuff just gets cheaper.
Flash as in a USB flash drive?
Yeah, thumb drive, some people call them.
Yeah, Micro Center has...
Which is different.
They're getting cheap on things. They have, I think, 256 gig now for about $50.
Really?
Yeah, their brand, and, you know, if it lasts for more than a month, then you got your money's worth out of it.
So our last... Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
So our last auction is mine. Oh, okay. So here's another example of what I'd almost call a netbook from the olden days. So... This is an HP OmniBook 800 CT 5166 mini laptop, 2 gigs with Windows 95 vintage notebook. It looks to be in really nice condition. This is a really cool line. This isn't the very original OmniBook. I put a link in the show notes with this to, I think it's a 300. Let me look back here.
But 166 megahertz.
Oh, to HP's webpage about it. But it had like the little mouse that popped out of the side.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Was.
I always thought that was the neatest thing in the world. So this is a subcompact is what they're called. I believe this is 94.5 or whatever, the original OmniBook like this. The smaller one was from 93, so I know that. So you really had netbook-like devices going back that far.
TFT display.
But they were way more expensive. In fact, they were more expensive than normal laptops back then, in some cases, versus now, you know, netbooks, the biggest also selling points that they're really cheap. But that's kind of cool. They want $229 for it, which it's a little bit high, I think, but it is kind of a neat old machine. Oh, look, the seller's name is OmniBooks. So it says seller refurbished. So this person has taken a lot of great care to clean it up and make sure it all works and all that stuff. So...
Somebody else has an OmniBook 800 CT. Buy it now for $120. Looking at it.
So, yeah, I'm certain you can get one cheaper. I'm just going to click on the link in the show notes to the Wikipedia article. So it's at HP's website. They have a museum online. Okay, so it's the HP OmniBook 300 is the first one, 1993. Okay. So introduced as a super portable personal computer, the HP... OmniBook 300 was the first in HP's OmniBook laptop line. So there you go. So that would be, you know, I answered my own question from earlier. So there's the equivalent of, boy, I forget things fast.
it's that age.
There was an equivalent maybe to like Apple's Duo, which, you know, was really expensive. Not at all what you could, you know, part of the parameters of a modern netbook. So what have we learned, Jeff?
For values?
Yeah.
That you can get classic netbook rather cheap. Yeah, you can get an EPC for anywhere from $20 to $50 that...
And you wouldn't want to pay more because you can buy a brand new one, basically, yep, for less than $150.
Tablets are a little more delicate.
Yeah.
These you can bang around a little bit because you can close them up and, you know, protect the screen. But I still use mine here and there. I have security cameras that that use Ethernet or, you know, wired Ethernet or wireless Ethernet to transmit to a server, and if something happens or if I reconfigure my network, I have to log into these cameras using an Ethernet cable,
right,
and readjust the parameters, and I can do that just with that EPC and a crossover cable. I just, you know, connect to the camera, and it has, the camera has its own built-in software, so I just need to put a static IP address on the EPC and then go to the web page for the camera.
That's pretty neat.
But it comes in. But it worked really well for me for ADT Pro, and it worked well for me for bridging a TI-99 to the internet through a serial to Telnet converter software that was running on it. I did that for VCF East 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So it just does stuff.
Right.
And, you know, doesn't make a lot of noise, doesn't take up a lot of space. And I also used it to, well, stream things if I needed to. I just needed a dedicated PC because it has wired Ethernet and wireless Ethernet in it. So
it's handy.
It's very handy. Oh, yeah, and I used it to back up files off of a K-Pro 10 through a serial interface just by running a, you know, a terminal program and, you know, using serial with a USB to serial converter. Right.
And that's what I've used mine like to interface with my little PyDP 8.
Yeah,
my
Altair it sits clone. Right on top of the K-Pro and yep, just flip the lid and there you go. You know, no big laptop. It just does a good job at what it, you know, what it was designed for. Or actually, it was designed just to surf the net. So I guess I've been doing everything but surfing the net with it. So yeah, $20 to $50, I think you can get a decent one, and, you know, if you do the stuff like I do, it'll certainly come in handy.
So tell us what's going on Facebook.
Facebook, kind of scrolling here, so I'm gonna pop through. Well, I guess you have been posting a lot of video feeds from Kickstarter projects that have been launched, like 8-Bit Magazine.
Oh yeah. So issue 2 of 8-Bit.
Yep.
Has a Kickstarter, and they've already passed their goal big time now, but still, basically what they're selling you is you're just pre-buying issue 2 or a subscription. So so check that out.
And then there's that little bit, the guy who owns a home computer.
Then I put it on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And that's also an interesting little little news report from 1981 about the internet on YouTube that's from. So there's a link in there to that.
And you link to some super rare Porsche Commodore PET. And I think some people were saying that it was not designed by Porsche.
Right,
so
right.
Whoever labeled it as such.
It was a different company related, yep, to the car company, but it's not the car company and stuff.
And you got the Sesame Street, or is that electric company? Delta Engineers.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yep.
Trying to fix a problem. Oh, and then what was the last thing? Oh, yeah, and then some videos. So
yes,
a couple of videos from VCF West, and hopefully more people are posting some of that stuff up. So,
oh, and you posted the picture. Oh yeah, we also put the link to the Kansas Fest Chicken Missile Mega Podcast, where I sat in for one half of this podcast to represent History of Personal Computing, and that was fun to do. It's up there on in the link in Facebook. From August 2nd. I think then we're going back since before the last show now, yeah, aren't we? Okay.
So I'll jump over to Twitter. So in Twitter, so tweeted a lot of the same stuff. Let's see, something, just a couple things unique to Twitter were a couple comments. So Josh Malone, just about a week ago, said, nice TP episode, ThinkPad. That's what he meant. I had, yeah, I had an old used 700C in college. I have a T61 now, last model to be branded IBM, I think. So that's always good to hear. Thank you very much. We always want more comments. And we got another one just yesterday from Jim Fullerton. And he says, listening to the Kansas Fest episode, laugh out loud to Jeff on the, quote, Burger Betty.
Yeah, I did not know who she was, although she was there.
And it's Burger Becky, right?
Becky, yeah.
Yeah, Burger Becky. So.
And I was reading off of a piece of paper. And I honestly don't remember if it actually said Betty or I just read it wrong. I don't have that piece of paper anymore. I should have saved it as a souvenir, right? It's ephemera from the podcast. But
can't save everything. No.
I probably actually did. More. I probably did put it in my pocket because it was just a piece of paper. So I didn't, you know, there was no place to throw anything away there. And it probably got mixed up with a bunch of receipts that I, you know, eventually shredded.
And I've dried my eyes now, but I think you told me that we didn't get any email.
Well, the only email we get is when somebody posts on Twitter or likes something that's posted on Twitter, but nobody actually sent anything. Well, you can do sad face, but
someone send us some darn video, or how about some audio? The audio we can play on the podcast, video we can share on the Facebook page, maybe even on Twitter, I don't know, or on a Snapchat. That Jeff says he's going to create a Snapchat account for us.
Dude, yeah. Did I say that? He's just taking advantage of my age. I
know. You know, talking about, and no kidding, just last night, what were we watching? My wife and I were watching something on the news, and something about Snapchat came up, and then I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I told my wife, and I go, well, you know what? Yeah, I'm finally getting old, because for the first time, there's two big mainstream technologies now that I don't know crap about and I'm not involved with, and a Snapchat and wait, what's the other one? I'm going blank. The
Ustream?
No, the other
Twitter. That's old. That's so last year.
The other Twitter one.
Oh, you know, Instagram?
Instagram, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know you could do video with Instagram.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, you know, Instagram and Snapchat are very popular and I don't do anything with them.
That's
so
right.
I guess I'm old now.
And I didn't even know Snapchat was based on Twitter.
Oh, and they just did something, like they just improved something about both of those things, and I don't remember. So I guess we need to get on the ball, Jeff.
Yeah, need to get into the 21st century.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for the show. Show 45 will be released on Friday, September 2nd. That's Labor Day weekend. And this will be our first episode covering the third tier of personal computing, the handheld. We'll be covering two of the very first DOS handhelds. Well, I say the very first, just two of the first. I think they're both pretty early ones. The Atari Portfolio and the Pocket POQET PC.
I don't have either one of those.
And maybe we might even find a couple other ones that are related to that. So that kicks off our third tier coverage, which will be great. That'll be really fun. Lots of neat stuff to talk about as we move forward. And you can find all our show notes at historyofpersonalcomputing.com. Again, send us feedback at our email, feedback@historyofpersonalcomputing.com. Or, you know, our Facebook page, Twitter account. Also, you can talk about us or talk to us in the Vintage Computer Forums. And all these links are in the show notes. I've been going there a little bit more often lately and enjoying that. And I posted, like, the podcast little link there asking people for feedback and stuff. So,
oh, that works. Yeah.
What else did I do? Posted one other thing too. Oh yeah. There's some great activity. Go and check out about the S100 computers. So, and I can't remember his name. I think it's John Monahan, I believe, but he just released an S100 card with a 486 processor.
Oh, really?
Bringing the S100 more into the
modern
world.
Two new S100 boards. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. 486
CPU board and...
So read up some of that.
Yeah, protected mode on the S100 system.
Oh, and I'm working on another interview for us.
Okay.
Maybe Jeff, along the lines of reproductions that we've kind of made our little niche.
Oh, yeah, those would be great. I love reproductions.
Yeah, me too. And that's going to do it, everybody. So thanks for joining us. Until next time, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Always fully research all of your purchases and sellers first before buying. See you next time.
See ya. Say they love me on eBay. Gonna buy a slightly damaged golf bag.